Hello, this is Leon Daniels, and this is Lunch with Leon. It's my regular podcast, where I hope to bring you interesting people and interesting stories from around the world. Lunch with Leon is an ITTHub.net production. Please go to our website at ITTHub.net to find out details of this podcast, other shows which are available, how to subscribe, and also lots of news, information, and everything you need to know about ITT Hub itself. My guest today is my old friend Joe Ma, who is the Deputy General Manager of the Shenzhen Bus Group in China. Joe is not only a major bus operator in a city of 23 million people, but he's also a leading light at UITP, which is our International Passenger Transport Trade Association. Joe's been very busy, as you might imagine, but the great advantage of talking with Joe today has been for us to learn what a city that is well through the global pandemic and into the recovery phase has been up to, and to find out what Joe thinks about the future. Because of the time difference, I spoke to Joe at my lunchtime, but it was evening for him and he hadn't even had his dinner. So Joe, I guess the first thing that many of my listeners would love to hear about is what life is like in Shenzhen, because you are many months ahead of UK and Europe, many other countries worldwide, many months ahead of recovering from the pandemic. So I think people would really love to hear from you what daily life is like in Shenzhen. Can you go to bars and restaurants and walk freely in the streets?
Yeah, actually, Leon, we had our lockdown here happened between January and late March, right? So sort of like COVID-19 hit China around sort of like the Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year, towards the end of January, and then we immediately straight away we went for a massive lockdown. You know, like all the major cities, and you know even in Shenzhen we had a lockdown between Hong Kong and Shenzhen. So the lockdown happened sort of between January and late March, and we started opening up towards the beginning of April. Gradually, of course, like, you know, but nowadays, like, things are back to normal. You know, all the shops and restaurants are open, bars are open, so people are going out, you know, in the evening, having their, you know, living a bit of normal life back again. But everybody's still being very, very cautious, of course. You know, like, everybody's out wearing face masks, you know, everywhere they go. Even in the park, you see people jogging and running, doing exercise, wearing a face mask. You know, but even, you know, inside, even the restaurants, people would only take off the face mask while they eat, you know, straight away afterwards, they put the face mask on. But yeah, people are very, very cautious. And a lot of the major venues are still not open, like cinemas are still not open, you know, so yeah.
And what's it done for the economy? Because the trouble with lockdown is that when you lock down the population to stop them from getting the virus, you lock down the economy as well, because people aren't traveling, they're not going to the office, they're not making equipment, and they're not spending in retail. So what's happened to the economy?
Well, there seems to be a bit of a bounce back, you know, like compared to sort of like the height of the problem of the pandemic. There's a bit of a bounce back, and you probably saw in the news recently that the GDP growth for China, sort of like for the first half of this year, is 3%. So it's not too bad, you know. 3% is quite enviable compared to many economies. So yeah, I mean, we live in a society where, you know, like there is a kind of like appetite for consumption. People going back out. Of course, a lot of the major industries are still suffering, you know, like in a sense that it's been balanced off by some of the sort of like the consumer, you know, the consumer consumption of, you know, like people going out eating, people sort of like going out for entertainment. But of course, some of the major industries are being affected. I mean, for ourselves, for instance, like, you know, our taxi business is tremendously affected by the whole pandemic situation. Yeah.
Yeah, and what's happened to your bus ridership? Is it back to pre-virus?
The bus ridership nowadays is, you know, during the morning peak and evening peak, we're back to about 90%, over 90%. The taxis is about, you know, normally, you know, we're back to about 80% of what used to be. We're suffering the taxi on the taxi side. We're suffering a bit from people traveling from Hong Kong to Shenzhen because all the major borders are still being closed. It's only one border that's been is under control. You know, the number of people coming in is sort of being controlled. But the nighttime economy, of course, is being affected a little bit. Before the pandemic, you get a lot of people coming through Hong Kong. So the nighttime economy is slightly affected by people not coming from Hong Kong. Yeah. I think hopefully by the second half of the year, which we are now approaching, that we'll see a slight increase in terms of ridership. Yeah.
Well, there'll be a big sigh of relief here because the hawks and doves here, of course, the hawks are suggesting that there will be a terrible long-term consequence for public transportation. The doves think that it will all come back to normal. So if you're quoting already back to 90% of what it was, that's a much higher number than people here are talking about. The sort of talking here has been about 24 to 25% permanent reduction in the right. short to medium term. And that some, maybe another 5 or 10% of that might recover in the longer term. But what we're waiting for here is, it's currently July. When we get to September, the schools will go back. At the moment, we don't really have a peak hour. At the moment, it's broadly flat all day. So the buses here are on about 45% of pre-virus. So we're a long way down. So we're not seeing a peak hour. And like you know, the morning peak is our busiest time because the kids and the workers are all traveling at the same time. In the afternoon, they're staggered. So one of our concerns is that if we don't get the school children peak back in September, then we have too many buses. Because if there isn't going to be a big morning peak, then we have too many buses for the whole day. So we're waiting here to see what September looks like. And from what you've said, we could be cautiously optimistic because it sounds like people are keen to get back to normal or as near normal as possible.
I have to qualify Leon that you know what I meant by 90% is morning peak, right? During the sort of the flat period, sort of the off peak, we're about 60-70%. So during the off peak, we're still not back to the way it used to be. So the morning peak, there's always been a bit of a crunch in the morning peak anyway. Plus now that we've got the sort of like what we call like the separation kind of criteria, we're still 90%, not 100%. But what we do is we've now introduced new services, like you know some of the on-demand services. People are moving more onto the on-demand services because on-demand we can control the crowd a lot better, control the passenger, you know, the ridership a lot better, and people can book a seat in advance. So we're moving kind of like a lot of our traditional kind of services onto on-demand services, which is something that gives the passengers a bit more comfort in the sense that they feel that they're getting a seat, they're not getting crowded buses, you know, like crunched up with other people. So we're trying to crawl back some of our passenger shares, the ridership, through new initiatives. And interesting, you mentioned the school children, right? Some of our taxi services now providing school children services because previously all the school kids will have to get on the school bus and they have to go for like an hour before they get to from home to school because the school buses go all around the neighborhood. So now they can book a taxi with our new services and the parents will get the comfort in mind seeing that the children being delivered to school in a straight run and with our application system and also the camera and everything, the parents can actually see the children being delivered off to school, safely. So we're coming up with some new services to sort of like try and crawl back some of our business, if you like. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's really interesting because firstly, I don't think we think of big urban city like Shenzhen doing demand responsive services because here in the UK, demand responsive is more typically for lightly used rural services. But you're talking about those sorts of services in an urban environment. And if I could just read that back to make sure I understand it correctly, what we're talking about here, people are choosing to use demand responsive services because it allows them to be certain they're going to get carried on a seat. It allows them to know that they're going to be picked up at home or near to home and delivered quite close to where they want to go. And people are choosing to do that in an urban environment where typically they would just normally wait in the street for a bus that comes every couple of minutes.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you know, the on-demand services have been around for us since last year. Since we started a new on-demand services, in fact, 2 years ago in 2018. And that is something that we run for the morning peak, where, you know, like delivering people from, carrying passengers from sort of like residential neighborhoods in the suburbs into the CBD. Because why we did it was because initially there is this major competition from the metro. Shenzhen's building a lot of new metro lines and then taking a lot of the passenger shares of the buses. So what we've done with in the morning peak, we've introduced new on-demand services. So passengers are guaranteed seat, and then these are express services running from the suburban areas into the CBD. So that's become very popular. And so it's not something new, but, you know, because we've had this on-demand service running for for the last 2 years, we're seeing an increasing number of people coming onto the sort of like services.
Is that demand responsive with full size vehicles or is it with smaller vehicles?
Yeah, we have two types. In fact, we have sort of like what we call we have coaches. We don't have the double decker buses. In fact, actually, we do have some of the double decker buses for the more busy lines. We have actually now over in the morning peak, we have about 1,000 routes running on demand services. So in some of the routes that are more busy, we have to run the double decker buses. But what we typically do is the 50 seater coaches, and that guarantees passengers a seat each. We also have the smaller types of vehicle, 10 seaters, which is something that we're looking into, so an innovative idea. Running first and last mile services, sort of like shuttling between, if you like, sort of like metro station, major transportation hub, and residential neighborhoods. That these are the ones that are running without a fixed stop or fixed route. So again, using mobile apps, and you know, you passengers can call for a bus, the mini buses, and typically we have about. I would say the ridership we have on each bus is about at least 50% and above. So for 10 seater, we get about 5 passengers on every trip, at least. So and these are running kind of what we do is run them in particularly off peak time, you know, between residential neighborhoods and transportation hubs.
Well, that sends an interesting message back to the West, I think, because as I said, we typically do demand responsive only with small vehicles, not with full-size vehicles. We typically use them in rural areas, and many of them have completely gone over the period of this emergency because the ridership is so low that it just hasn't been cost-effective. So a whole load of demand responsive services, including the two that London was piloting, ended as a result of the pandemic and have never resumed.
Yeah.
Here's a case where we're using demand responsive, which is a blend really of demand responsive and pre-booking a seat. So you are getting yourself, and in this particular, in your case, on a 50-seater coach.
Yeah.
So you get an improved quality of service. You know you're going to get a seat because you've booked it in advance. And the booking process is very simple because people are booking things on their phone and doing their shopping on their phone and making all the other arrangements on their phone anyway. And it's very predictable. That's really that's interesting. I wonder how that could be developed here. That's very exciting.
Yeah, and it's something that is good is that the on-demand services that we run in the morning peak is passengers can elect for a new line. I mean, if you have enough people voting for a new line, we'll open it. You know, as long as you've like say for example a 50 seater. If we have more than 25 people, more than 50% of people voting for a line, we would open a new line. Of course, we will review the line, you know, review whether after 1 month, whether we're still getting the same amount of passengers. If we see a drop in passengers, we may move on to something else. So it's very kind of market driven and very demand responsive. Yeah.
And one of the things that this social distancing has done, of course, some people are marketing it for the first time. You can guarantee that the seat next to you will be empty. Instead of putting a bag on it and hoping nobody wants to sit there and goes and sit somewhere else, now you can guarantee it. So it's interesting here in the UK, only a few operators have sold up the idea of social distancing. Guaranteed two seats to yourself, guaranteed window seats. Too many of our operators here have made their buses look like it's a crime scene. And there's yellow everywhere. And there's big notices saying, no, you can't be here. No sitting, no standing, no smiling. And for me, I think this misses the opportunity. Making it look like a crime scene really is bad. One of our operators actually had a photograph of a guy in a hazmat suit with a power washer cleaning the interior. And he was trying to say, look what we're doing to make the buses safe. But actually, he just made it look like the thing had been the subject of radioactive poisoning and was being... So there's definitely a message, isn't there, about selling up the positives. Because in order to get people back, they have to feel safe. And maybe this... I have to say, traveling by coach on your morning commute with two seats to yourself, one for you and one for your bag, I think sounds like a really good, thing. But what does it do for the economics? Because we couldn't make money... With buses where we had them 75 and 85% full. So if you're if you're maxed out at 50% full, what does that do to the economics?
Well, fortunately for us here in Shenzhen, it's a very heavily subsidized operation. The average fare is like what is it? 20 pence, you know, like compared to London, right? So it's already very low. So we're getting heavily subsidized by government. And they will, I mean, of course, we get audited with the number of passengers we carried, you know, the number of the miles that we've done each year, we've completed each year. But I think, unfortunately, in the sense that we're faced with this pandemic situation, there really is, you either, you know, go for kind of like the what we call the community immunization, or you protect yourself, you know. So it's a hard choice to make, really, and for us, we kind of take the sort of middle of the road approach. We try and enforce the number of passengers by allowing some of this kind of on demand services, and if we do see a sort of like major sort of kind of like surge in number of passengers, we would run an extra bus. And really, I think as an operator, we just need to be imaginative and flexible. Of course, having said that, you do need sort of like government support. And thankfully, in Shenzhen, the government has been very, very supportive in that sense. You know, like even sort of like allowing us to run some new services, and we don't have to go and apply for them. And so we do have a very supportive government or authority, if you like. Yeah.
Well, you've been reading, of course, that what we have here is a government that's at war with Transport for London. And Transport for London immediately ran out of money because ridership had fallen to such a low level. It had to go to the government for some funding. The government funding was forthcoming, but only with strings. And the strings are not entirely acceptable to the mayor and to the authority. So it's refreshing to hear that in your case, everybody's pulling in the same direction, which is to keep the public transportation running and keep it safe and keep it attractive so that people will continue to travel, which is good for all of us.
Either that or you see, gridlock in the city. You know, we did have a bit of a gridlock at the beginning, you know, when the solar economy opened back up. We did, you know, like we see a lot of traffic jam in the morning, but that was actually government also made a conscious decision that at the beginning, they were allowing all different license plates to come into the city in the morning. Like, you know, even if you're not outside, license plate from outside of Shenzhen, people were allowed to drive into the city. But now what they've done is gradually they're starting to restrict the number of people coming in. From, for example, if your license plate is outside of Shenzhen, you're not allowed to drive into Shenzhen during certain periods of time. So this is something that government is also helping to, you know, people say, okay, enough is enough. Right, you've had your 2 months of driving in, you know, like social isolation by your own choice. Now you just got to get back onto public transport. So government is actually helping out a little bit in that sense. Yeah, and so this kind of the recovery has been gradual. It's not like, okay, end of March and we're going to open up the economy and 3-4 kind of thing. It's still kind of like a gradual opening through kind of different control mechanism.
And have you had good cooperation out of the staff? Because here in London, we initially had quite a high staff absenteeism rate. We've sadly lost in London maybe 45 members of staff across transport as a whole. About half of those were bus drivers. The bus drivers who died, sadly, seem to come from particular parts of London, particular areas. And the bus drivers, I've got to say, of course, have been putting their lives on the line by manning the services every day, and despite the risk. So have you had good cooperation out of the staff?
Because when we had saw like the outbreak, whatever, the outbreak of the of back in November and at the end of January, it just coincided with Chinese New Year, and a lot of our staff were away. You know, like you probably know Shenzhen is a city of 23 million. Normally, you know, like but during any major holiday, half of the population would be away. You know, it's a major immigrant city. People are like a lot of workers coming in from other provinces. So during the the height of the pandemic, at the end of January, beginning of February, where half of the population were away. I mean, that includes our staff. Of a staff force of 30,000, we have a staff force of 30,000 people. Half of them were away. So when they came back, we had to give them isolation. We had to make sure that they were being sort of like go into quarantine for 14 days. So we provided sort of like all the sort of support facilities for them, you know, like accommodation. We had people making sure that they get 3 meals a day. I mean, these are really, really solitary confinement. Leon, like, it's that drastic. You know, they're not allowed to go outside of the room. Those who are quarantining at home, they're not allowed to go outside of the home. Those who are sort of in staff quarters, they're not allowed to go outside. But you know, in order to defend and support for them, we had volunteers sort of delivering meals for them 3 times a day, and all our staff were given face masks to wear. And it's a mandatory thing for them to wear face masks. And we went into emergency procurement to buy PPEs and face masks and everything. So thankfully, with all that, none of our staff were affected. And it's really sad to hear, you know, that public transport, you know, workers being affected by the virus, really. So we made a very, very conscious decision to first of all, making sure our staff is fully protected, and also making sure that all the passengers coming on board are wearing face masks. And if they don't, then we can refuse a ride. Yeah.
So the other thing that makes Shenzhen famous, apart from you, of course, is that you have had a zero emission bus fleet for longer than just about everybody I can think of, and an almost total zero emission taxi fleet.
Yeah, 99%. Yeah.
So many cities around the world are only just embarking on this journey, and they've been playing, as we have in lots of places, with small fleets of electric buses, small fleets of zero emission buses, because we mustn't forget hydrogen in this. But the big rollout, to the extent that you have done in a city of 23 million people with a complete electric bus fleet and an almost complete electric taxi fleet, so you must have years more experience with this than anybody else can have. So what can people look forward to with the longer term with electric vehicles and looking after them and using them and keeping them going?
Well, we started way back in 2010. You know, we're the lab mice of electric buses. So we went through almost three generations of buses now. I mean, it all started off as an experiment. You know, like we bought 100 buses back in 2010, and gradually, we bought more. And the full scale conversion came in 2017 for the buses, and 2018 for all the taxis. I mean, we've had our ups and downs with electric buses, and we've had to completely retrain all our staff and sort of the mindset and everything, the whole infrastructure and everything. So so far we've been very kind of like we've done quite well out of it, and the technology is also improving, and you know, the battery technology, the charging time is a lot better now compared to the old days, and the range is a lot better. And of course, we've had to replan all our routes according to the sort of like the range of the bus. It's a major step to take. And you know, we've seen result. You know, the environment in Shenzhen is a lot better. I mean, even if you compare to Hong Kong to Shenzhen, if you go to Hong Kong and stand by streets, I mean, although Hong Kong running Euro 6 engines, but in the summer, you know how hot it is in this part of the world. We get up to 37 degrees, and if you stand by the roadside, it can be up to 40 degrees, Celsius. So the heat coming off the engine, you don't get that in Shenzhen anymore, and certainly you don't hear the noise. It's not as noisy. Yeah, I mean, I think the general reception has been very positive from the community. Yeah. But I mean, I think electric buses is the way to go for many, many cities, and I'm pleased to see that a lot of the other sort of like world cities are taking on electric buses.
I was going to say, some of our listeners may of course not know that BYD global headquarters is 40 minutes up the road from you, so you are well placed in terms of sales and support. Yeah. But actually, to be running electric buses in such a vicious climate, when you are using a huge amount of power for air conditioning in the height of the summer, and you are running really very intensively. I mean, that's a big pull for electric vehicles, isn't it?
Yeah, there is.
So I think that's remarkable. So you think the future is definitely electric? And I was just going to ask you what you thought of hydrogen.
Well, I was going to say that hydrogen is also going to be something that's going to be big. But it's too expensive. I mean, we are starting to look into sort of like fuel cell buses. We're running a few on trial at the moment. But we started with electric 10 years back. But we are beginning to look at fuel cell, and I think fuel cell will probably become the main kind of technology. Maybe down another 5-10 years time. So we'll probably have to change our whole infrastructure and start all over again.
That's very interesting. So as the city in the world that started first really with large scale electric and is at 100%, you're not saying to us that maybe in the future you might have a fleet that's 70% electric and 30% hydrogen, because electric will do most of your urban bus needs, but hydrogen could do your longer distance and longer range.
Yeah, that's right.
You're actually saying that hydrogen could become more popular than electric?
It could, yeah. I mean, I think the way you put it is absolutely perfect. You know, like for the shorter routes in the city, they can be electric buses, and for the long distance routes, the fuel cell would be perfect. I don't know. I mean, I'm as long as it's green and environmentally friendly, I'm all for it. We came in 10 years ago with electric, and in those days, back in those days, that was considered as advanced. But now we are starting to sort of dabble with fuel cell, and maybe in another 5-10 years time, maybe 50%, 70%, I can see a major portion of our buses running fuel cell.
Well, that's interesting to know. I've had on the show Isbrand Ho from BYD, who made a very strong case for electric. I then had Joe Bamford, who's the owner of Rice Hydrogen Wrightbus, who made a really strong case for hydrogen.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the market will decide, and it'll depend what we can get out of this. When it'll depend on our energy efficiency and cost and the whole life cost and so on. So the other thing, Joe, I was going to mention to you before we close. So you're super active inside UITP. So you and I have been crisscrossing various places in the world by accident, as you've been on your UITP.
Well, I've been chasing after you, actually. I've got a tracing app on you, Leon.
and we did once, did we not? We did accidentally run into each other in Sydney.
Without knowing
that each other was there, which was extraordinary. Yeah. I was just going to ask you, and in particular with UITP hat on, I wonder what you would say to young people who are thinking about coming into the transport industry, who are thinking in terms of a career, maybe they've just finished at school, finished at university, or finished their studies in some way, and they're looking about where to place their careers. And there's loads of attractive places to work, especially if you're into video or digital or any exciting things like that. What we don't get is enough of the right sort of people wanting to come into transport, And we certainly don't get enough women, and we don't get enough people from the ethnic minorities wanting to come into the big civil engineering, traffic engineering, highway engineering type bits of it as well. So I'll just wonder, as we broadcast this as far around the world as we can, what would you say to young people who are thinking about whether transport is an exciting and worthwhile place to come and work?
Well, I think it's already a kind of like, you know, before this whole pandemic situation, you know, public transport is, you know, I mean, certainly take the case of London. A lot more people are using public transport. And you know, like even the younger generation nowadays, I don't think they like to own a car. You know, like this, like, you know, this is either this whole share economy using you know, share cars or share whatever, you know, share bikes and share scooters. And public transport, I mean, in my opinion, is that it's you know, for the last 10 decades, last decade, there's been a lot of, you know, this resurgence of, you know, people moving back to live in the city, and then therefore they don't need cars, they can travel on public transport. And for a city like London, you know, like, and, you know, you've got such great public transport system, and similar to Hong Kong, and this, which is something what Shenzhen is also aspiring to become, you know, like a city with, you know, good public transport system. I think the major thing is actually to make public transport kind of young and, you know, funky and you know, and fashionable to travel in public transport. And I think we also need to sort of like a look at the whole perception of how people look at public transport. It's not just serving the sort of the lower common denominator. It should serve, you know, everybody should be using public transport. And you do need a very kind of comprehensive and kind of robust overall planning, you know, like looking. I mean, I think London's doing a great job, you know, with the sort of like the road pricing, sort of like the congestion zones, just, you know, the sort of like whatever you call it, the emission charge zone. I think that's something that, you know, London's actually doing quite well, and is an example for many cities to follow and aspiring to.
But I was just thinking, for careers, would you let your children come into public transport as a worthwhile career for their future?
I would. I mean, I was just having a conversation with my team the other day, and I was saying how we need to attract young people to come in. You know, like, of course, it's the older generation, so like, you know, they need to be change their mindset or you know, like, so re-educated or whatever. But I would, but you do need to allow public transport to have more flexibility in terms of making it more kind of like entertainment. You know, you need to mix transportation into some. It's a lifestyle thing, you know, like, yeah, something that we're looking into now is using some of our buses as you know, like cafes and bars and restaurant buses and running some fashion show and, you know, like music, you know, like we have, you know, rock stars and people getting on our buses doing promotion. I think you do need to think about the buses as a kind of entertainment, you know, venue. And you do need to allow kind of exciting things to happen on buses, running kind of like different themes and stuff like that. And I think there's a good future for public transport as long as government. I said that's a major thing. Government needs to give that extra elbow room and support. Yeah.
So Joe, thank you very much indeed for joining us on Lunch with Leon this week. I'm about to have my lunch. You still haven't had your dinner, even though you're 8 hours ahead of me. So, Joe, thank you for making the time. For all of our Lunch with Leon listeners, I have to say, fascinating to talk to Joe. They're long since through the peak of the coronavirus pandemic and are well into the recovery. Life is rapidly coming back to normal, with 90% of the peak on public transport already recovered. Businesses are reopening and things are getting back to a different sort of normal. There's more to go, but plenty of progress. We've also learned today, which is really exciting for all of us, I think, is that a mature zero emission electric bus operator has already dug a long pathway through of working with now their third generation of electric buses. And it's possible to have an urban city with really extreme climate requirements, with air conditioning and so on, making it possible still to run zero emission vehicles, which is very exciting. And of course, that the future is so bright that we would be well to encourage our young people to come and join our industry not only because it's exciting, but also because we ought to make it fun and as part of making the whole public transport thing attractive. So, Joe, really appreciate you making the time, because it's evening for you. So really appreciate you making the time to do that. I'm going to send Joe all of our best wishes and look forward to seeing you somewhere in the world when we're both allowed to travel again.
Thank you, Leon. It's been wonderful talking to you, and thank you for inviting me onto your program. It's a real pleasure seeing you again. Hope to see you soon in real life.